Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet, presented by OGGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron. How you doing, Corey?
Not too bad, Nick. Long day of work waiting for some of these trades and signings to pop off. It's been kind of dead since our first, like, five podcasts in 72 hours.
Yeah, it definitely has slowed down. We got a couple signings to talk about today, a few rumors and whatnot. But before we get started, like Corey mentioned, we've already dropped a couple pods. LeBron to LA, Cousins to Golden State, you know, some recaps of day one and day two. But you can check that out on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, and Google Play. But let's just get started with some of the signings. First up, Raymond Felton re-signed with OKC on a one-year deal. Thoughts on this one?
I mean, solid. I mean, he had a really good year for them off the bench. He was one of their more consistent bench players. I don't mind re-signing him. He's a good backup point guard for them. It's a good move for OKC just to keep guys like that who, you know, they grind hard and they play hard. And, you know, I of course love to see my dad, Bob Felton, out there.
Yeah, like you said, Felton's not a great move, not anything amazing, but solid. He played well for them last year. You don't really need a backup point guard that's going to play a ton of minutes with Russell Westbrook already there. So not a bad signing. OKC's bench is starting to look pretty good, actually. So we got some more OKC news to talk about later. But next signing, Amir Johnson re-signed with Philly, one-year deal as well. Thoughts on this one? Pretty similar to the Felton thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think Amir Johnson's a very good locker room guy, a good vet. I mean, the Celtics loved him when he was there. And obviously the Sixers love him enough to bring him back. You know, he doesn't do anything great, but, you know, when given minutes, he can play some good solid minutes. And as a backup guy for in case anything happens to some of those big guys on the Sixers, I think it's a good move to bring back Amir Johnson.
Yeah, like you said, nothing too crazy. He's a good locker room guy and just somebody to have around. He's not going to play a ton of minutes, but he's going to do his job when he's asked of it. So another solid move. You know, like we said, nothing too crazy has happened. The Sixers also made another signing. I'm going to try to pronounce his name the best I can. Nemanja Bjelica agreed to sign with Philly on a one-year deal, $4.4 million. Great three-point shooter, 41% last year from three. It should be a nice addition, kind of filling Ersan Ilyasova's role.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize, you know, he was 30 years old, but it's a good move. And you know, he played some big-time minutes for the Timberwolves when Jimmy Butler went down. He showed that he can shoot the long ball, like you mentioned. I think it's a nice, solid move for the Sixers, especially because they keep getting, you know, a lot of guys, especially bigs, who can shoot. I think Philly's got some nice moves. You know, obviously, they've been tied to LeBron. Well, they were tied to LeBron, and they've been kind of tied to Kawhi. But, you know, if they miss out on those guys, they miss out on LeBron. But if they miss out on Kawhi, they made some really solid moves to still make this team really competitive and actually slightly better than last year.
Yeah, and it's a one-year deal, so they still have the flexibility as well. And I know a lot of Timberwolves fans feel like Tibbs underutilized Bjelica, so I think he could have even a bigger role in Philly, just giving them some more floor spacing with Embiid and Simmons. So, but another big, he signed with your Pacers, Kyle O'Quinn, one-year deal as well, $4.5 million. A really nice offseason so far for the Pacers.
Yeah, you know, I had a couple tweets today about it. You know, the Pacers had me disgruntled and upset when they signed Doug McDermott to that three-year deal, which I still think is too much money for Doug McDermott. That's just besides the point. But they've added Tyreek Evans and now Kyle O'Quinn. And I love the Kyle O'Quinn signing. You know, they got rid of Al Jefferson, Lance Stephenson, and Glenn Robinson, and they get, you know, Doug McDermott, Tyreek Evans, and Kyle O'Quinn. And Kyle O'Quinn can do a little bit of everything. He can score a little bit. He can rebound. He can play make a little bit. I actually love the idea of how versatile these big men can be between Miles Turner, Domas Sabonis, and Kyle O'Quinn. You know, you could even see Miles Turner play maybe some stretch four and let Kyle O'Quinn play center. You can see Sabonis and Kyle O'Quinn on the floor. I think just Kyle O'Quinn makes this backcourt a little bit or front court, I should say. Is it backcourt, front court? Front court. You know, just more diverse. I actually really love the sign, especially for a one-year deal. And, you know, the Warriors are after him for good reason. And, you know, the Pacers, like you mentioned, they've been making some really solid moves.
Yeah, like you said, some nice versatility. You know, they're almost interchangeable. You know, all the guys they have, Sabonis, Turner, and Kyle O'Quinn can all play the four and the five, and they can kind of switch and swap roles, definitely. So another nice signing. And like you said, the Pacers are doing a good job. For a team that hasn't signed any big all-stars or big-time free agents, they've had a nice offseason. They'll definitely get better going into next year, especially because they have young guys like Turner and Oladipo who are going to continue to improve.
Yeah, for sure. It's been a good offseason, and I think, you know, we had a guy, I don't know who wrote the piece, but it was on the Pacers, and The Pacers really have been having a very quiet but steady offseason.
Yeah, definitely a great piece on OTG. Check that out. Ian Clark re-signed with the Pelicans on a one-year deal as well. Just another backup guard for the Pelicans. Like I said, nothing too crazy happened today, but another solid move for the Pelicans to kind of add, and hopefully he can bounce back from a somewhat of a rough season last year.
Yeah, you know, the Pelicans need shooting. Obviously, Ian Clark didn't do a great job shooting last year, but we know he's still a shooter at heart, and hopefully he can pick up his numbers. But it's a solid move by the Pelicans to keep the shooter in home.
Yeah, nothing crazy, but not a bad move, and it's a one-year deal. A lot of these guys on one-year deals, like we've seen a lot in free agency, because there's not a ton of salary cap out there, so a lot of these guys are going to try to cash in next year. Probably maybe the most surprising move, I would say, over the last few days, Tony Parker signed with the Charlotte Hornets, 2 years, $10 million, and he's leaving San Antonio, where he's played for 16 or 17 years.
Very surprising. Obviously, he's won, what, 4 or 5 titles with San Antonio. He's been the point guard of that franchise for a decade or decade and a half, it feels like. He's a solid point guard. He's a vet. It's an interesting move by the Hornets because we really don't know what they're doing. It felt like they were going towards a rebuild, but you know, maybe they still are, and Parker's just along to kind of pass the time. For me, I think the Spurs let him go because I think the Spurs still have hope that maybe because they didn't re-sign him, the Kawhi might come back, because – obviously, Tony Parker had some comments about Kawhi, and Kawhi didn't like the comments. But, you know, the end of Tony Parker in San Antonio is here, and it's going to be strange as hell to see him in Charlotte.
You mentioned it, like the Hornets are in a weird position because I feel like they're not actually going to full rebuild right now, and they're trying to kind of be like mediocre, compete for an 8th or 7th seed again, which, you know, it's not terrible, but I think I know a lot of fans would like to just go into rebuild mode, get rid of some of those contracts, and kind of move forward.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, in the East, because of obviously LeBron leaving, more teams have a chance for the playoffs. And obviously the Hornets haven't made the playoffs in the last couple of years. Nicholas Batum is under contract for a long time. And if they don't move Kemba Walker, you know, this team could actually still be a playoff team if things bounce right for them.
Yeah, it's not out of the realm of possibilities. Like you said, the East isn't going to be crazy. Some big news kind of dropped today, but this is kind of something we all thought was going to happen. It looks like Carmelo and OKC are going to part ways at some point this summer. If it's via trade, stretch provision, whatever, he's not going to be on OKC next year. Thoughts on this one?
Hey, Pete, they said I got to come off the bench. You know, that soundbite will forever be my favorite from Melo's tenure in OKC, which also signifies why he's being bought out, because Melo refuses to come off the bench. Even though once he is bought out, he probably will be a sixth man somewhere else. It makes sense for OKC. You don't want to pay him, you know, $28.5 million or whatever it is, near $30 million. Hopefully they can agree somewhere near, like I'm hoping, like, you know, $17, $18 million. Maybe they can save like $9 million off this buyout. And, of course, they'll probably get under the luxury tax. It would be huge for them. It's, you know, the Melo experiment in OKC was a nice try. It just didn't work out. And I think if OKC actually does buy him out, I think they actually get a lot better, because they don't have to worry about playing Melo, you know, 30 to 35 minutes a game.
Yeah, exactly. And if they just get rid of Melo, it's going to save them almost $95 million in luxury tax fees, just because there's so much over the cap. And like you said, maybe they can even give him to give back some more money, save them some other things. What would be some teams you think he's going to be interested in? Obviously, the rumors are the Lakers, the Rockets, the Heat, and maybe the Blazers. Who do you think would be the best fit for Carmelo?
I think there's only two choices for Melo, and that's either Los Angeles with the Lakers or Houston with, you know, James Harden and Chris Paul. Now, both teams, if he was to choose to go there, his role is significantly lower than it had ever been in his career. But, you know, who knows? You know, Melo playing with Chris Paul, playing with LeBron, those two guys are close friends of Melo. Maybe Melo will accept, you know, a smaller role if, you know, LeBron's like, Melo, listen, you know, I know you don't want to hear this, but you are a sixth man, but I can get you some good catch-and-shoot looks. Because I do think Melo is still valuable to a team. It's just the fact that he has to accept, you know, where he is. And the difference between Melo and LeBron is the fact that LeBron's kept himself in great shape and Melo just hasn't. But I think those two are the logical choices, because especially I think Melo wants to win, and I think he's going to be looking at a chance to win. And, of course, Houston, you know, losing Trevor Ariza, they could use somebody who could give them some more offensive firepower.
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting offseason for Melo. And like you kind of said, maybe he could do some changes to his body, get a little bit lighter, kind of fit the new style of basketball. He just needs to commit of doing some more of the dirty work, some of the small things, you know, and helping teams win. He's not that go-to scorer that he once was. And I think he needs to understand that. And like you said, maybe LeBron could, maybe Chris Paul or somebody can convince him that coming off the bench is the best thing. I wouldn't completely rule out Miami with Dwayne Wade. And then also Portland had some interest. It also depends on Melo too, because like we mentioned, he's not really interested in having a smaller role, so he might want to start on a team, and if a team is going to give him an opportunity to play big minutes and get a lot of shots, he might just take it. So
yeah, that's where the Blazers come into play, I think, because I think with the Blazers, Melo would likely have a bigger role.
Yeah, and it makes sense. Like, and they were interested in him last year, they were talking to him, and obviously he's, I don't think the big market matters as much. I think winning does matter, and they're a pretty good team. It's not like they're going to probably win a championship. Nobody's going to probably win a championship unless you're the Golden State Warriors, but it's a possibility. I wouldn't be surprised if another team popped up too that was like, all right, Melo, we'll let you start and give you a lot of shots. But we really don't know until the buyout happens. And I would be amazed if there was a trade of some sort, but you never know.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either.
Moving on from there, we're going to look at some of the free agents that haven't signed yet. Some bigger names that haven't really got a lot of attention. Like I mentioned before, salary cap just really isn't there. There's not a ton of cap space out there. Clint Capella's one guy going into the offseason. There was a good amount of hype around him, and it feels like there really hasn't been any rumor surrounding Capella, and it looks like he's leaning towards signing his qualifying offer.
It's surprising. You know, I thought maybe the Lakers would go harder at him because of DeMarcus Cousins, but then it came out DeMarcus Cousins wasn't even – you know, on their radar, or they didn't even want DeMarcus Cousins, which again was kind of puzzling. Yeah, and the market has been really short this offseason. I mean, there's not a lot of money out there, and guys like, you know, Clint Capella, Zach LaVine, Jabari Parker, Marcus Smart, all these guys who are, you know, some of them are up and coming, some of them have shown that they can play in this league, just aren't getting looks. It's kind of puzzling because you don't really see this that often. And like you said, you know, Clint Capella is probably going to have to suffer and accept the qualifying offer, which for the Rockets is literally the best-case scenario since they have so much money on the books now after signing Chris Paul. They can kind of run it back with a little bit of a cheaper salary cap. But, it's surprising that there's just so many little teams that can afford to pay some of these big-time guys.
Yeah, it definitely that cap spike a few years ago is really hurting a lot of teams and a lot of players. But you mentioned the qualifying offer. It'll help the Rockets this year, but it does make it a little bit scary going to next season because he will be an unrestricted free agent and he could go cash out somewhere else. But, I mean, there is a good chance the Rockets will do everything they can to retain him, but it's something to keep an eye on. Marcus Smart, another guy you mentioned, some reports came out that he wasn't too happy that the Celtics aren't communicating enough with him. Thoughts on that situation?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look good for the Celtics' point of view. Or it doesn't look good if – it doesn't make – it's not a good look for the Celtics. Marcus Smart has played his, you know, guts out for that team. You know, how many times has he dove on the ground in Madison Square – or TD Garden? So that's surprising. Obviously, him being hurt and disgruntled is – you know, it's kind of got the writing on the wall, it feels like, because I don't know at this point if he would even want to come back. I mean, unless that's the only offer he got. I actually have hopes that when Carmelo gets bought out, the Thunder go after Marcus Smart. I would just love to see him because they got that whole defensive look going for them and another guy with a chip on his shoulder. But it's been odd to see so little activity for a guy like Marcus Smart, who we can see as, you know, even though his offensive numbers are never great, just the impact he has on the floor is just always felt.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's just been tough. The money's just not there. But Smart's been a guy who's you thought would be one of the restricted free agents that got an offer sheet and kind of someone tried to pry him away from Boston. But he looks like another guy that the qualifying offer is the most likely situation. Then next year he can kind of cash out and he'll probably end up leaving Boston. He might just have to suffer like Capella, sign that smaller deal for this year. But next year he could definitely get some bank, especially because a lot more teams are going to have cap space next season.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the only good thing is if Marcus Smart does come back, I don't want to see it affecting, like, team morale or team chemistry. I feel like that Celtics group really does love each other and love playing together. But it would just be one of those things where kind of like LeBron and Cleveland, you know, his relationship with Dan Gilbert was obviously never very good. And that might be what we see with Marcus Smart and that front office going forward if he does stay for one more year.
Yeah, the front office definitely, that relationship might be sour. But like you said, Smart's a baller and he's not going to let it impact him on the court. So I expect him to ball out next season regardless. Another restricted free agent, Jabari Parker. He said, you know, sources have come out and said, you know, his market has really dried up and it's not what he expected. And obviously, you know, coming off a season where he's recovering from a torn ACL still and there's been some locker room concerns, it's not a huge surprise. And like we said, not a ton of money out there. what do you think is going to happen with Parker? Same thing back to the Bucks?
I feel like he is going to go back to the Bucks, but at the same time, I don't know. I feel like if someone offers him even like a $5 million contract, like something just small, maybe he accepts it. But again, like the Bucks might match it if it's that low. It's surprising to, again, and obviously the two knee injuries is something, and the lack of defense. That's another guy who we may see go back to Milwaukee and then quickly be out of the door when next offseason comes if he can stay healthy. Because, you know, there's already been rumors that he doesn't really want to play in Milwaukee, or there's been, you know, the issues with him not feeling, you know, like liking his role in Milwaukee. So it just feels like, too, a lot of these guys are going to be stuck with a team they don't want to be on anymore.
Yeah. Another, touching on probably the last restricted guy, then we'll move on to unrestricted free agent, Zach LaVine. He hasn't gotten a lot of hype either. You know, there's been some talk about possibly the Kings sending an offer sheet, but it looks like he'll be back with the Bulls, which I don't think is a bad thing for either party, but he's still a guy that expected a little bit more money flow this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, it's been said that the, you know, at the front office for the Bulls may be wavering on Zach LaVine. They didn't really feel comfortable necessarily paying him, you know, $16 million or some big time money. And it looks like they may get lucky. You know, he might also be coming back for cheap. They'll get another year to see him fully healthy, which, you know, can change a lot of their minds. Because obviously him coming back from a knee injury, I don't think he was ever at his fullest last season. And maybe if he gets a full year of being healthy, we can actually see what he is like. Because we still saw some of that explosiveness, like you've mentioned on previous pods. You know, he still had some big games. I think he had a 30-point outburst at one point. But I wouldn't be totally surprised if the Kings do shoot him an offer sheet, because, you know, the Kings do have, I think, like 16 or 17 million left in cap space. And it wouldn't necessarily be a bad move for the Kings to go after a young guard like Zach LaVine.
Yeah, I think with a lot of these restricted guys, you know, since there isn't really a market, if the other team, if, you know, their current team doesn't match, you could actually really get them on a bargain, because when you sign a restricted free agent, it has to be a multi-year deal. So you could possibly get one of these guys under value, and then they're all young, so they could improve a lot moving forward. So there is some risk to it, but there's also some real positive. And it could even work out for the current team they're on, where they're like, all right, you don't want to sign the qualifying offer, we'll send you something a little bit better. And being a young player and never really receiving a big contract, they could end up getting a bargain for the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, and that's another thing. Like, I was thinking about this earlier today when I got the notification about Carmelo. You know, if Melo gets bought out and it leaves them, you know, $8 or $9 million in cap space, they might just throw an offer at a Zach LaVine or a Jabari Parker, just because why not? You know, maybe the Bucks or Bulls don't want to match that kind of contract. Yeah. It's something to think about.
On the OKC front, though, I'm pretty sure they're going to be maxed out anyways, even if they get rid of Melo, just because their books are so bad and they had to pay Paul George. But it would be nice for them to add another piece, but I think it would have to happen via trade of some sorts. But moving to some of the unrestricted free agents, Isaiah Thomas. This is a guy that's even been mentioned that he might have to take a minimum deal this season.
Yeah, you know, the hip injury and then the toxic situation that kind of became what Cleveland was, then, you know, him refusing to take a bench role, or, you know, not saying he's never going to take a bench role, him still expecting that big time bucks. There have been no big time bucks coming his way. You know, he's an undersized guard with a hip injury, and hip injuries are major, as we know. He's also 29-30. He's not at necessarily the youngest of ages, but yeah, you know, the market for an undersized point guard who's dealing with injuries isn't going to be high. I still think he's going to end up, you know, signing that minimum type of 1 year deal with the Orlando Magic. I mentioned this earlier. I think that was a really good fit for him. And then I saw a report came out that the Magic had interest in him. I think that makes sense. You know, they're looking for a point guard. You know, they're a team that's rebuilding. Isaiah Thomas can have some fun over there. He can throw some oops to Aaron Gordon and just kind of run the show, if you will.
Yeah, it gives him a chance to kind of work on his value for the next offseason, make some money, kind of showcase he's healthy and kind of put some points up. And it kind of adds some hype to the Magic. You know, Isaiah is not the same player he probably was in Boston or ever will be that player again. But he definitely provides a nice scoring punch that they could use at the guard position. And when you have guys like Mo Bamba and Isaac back there, they could possibly kind of help out having a smaller guard around. So it could end up being a really nice fit. Three-point shooter specialist, Wayne Ellington's out there still. What are your thoughts on him? Where's he going to land?
Wayne Ellington will get scooped up by someone. Who, I'm not positive. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up back in Miami. But, you know, I just have a feeling that somehow, some way, one of these contending teams, like the Rockets, the Lakers, maybe even OKC, will somehow get him on, like, a vet minimal deal. There's not a ton of money out there, as we mentioned. But he's another guy who can shoot threes. I think he led the league in bench three-pointers. There's just not a big market. But I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up back in Miami because, like we mentioned, the market right now is just very small.
And he could probably get the most money in Miami because they'd probably lock him up for a couple years. And he had probably his best season in Miami. But I also wouldn't be surprised, like you said, he'd be an amazing fit in Houston three-point-wise. Same thing for the Lakers who really need some spacing. And he already played there as well. So no surprise Wayne Ellington wouldn't, you know, he could really sign with a contender and give them some nice three-pointing punch off the bench. Another unrestricted guy, Brook Lopez, he's yet to sign. What are your thoughts on him?
I have a feeling he comes back to the Lakers. You know, he already mentioned that he would, if they got some stars, he would come back for the vet minimum just to win. And I still think that's probably what's going to happen. But, you know, we've mentioned it. I know you've, I think you're, you know, you're hoping for it deep down that he might end up back in Brooklyn, but I don't know if there's been any traction to any of those rumors or desires. So for me, I just think that the Lakers make the most sense. Cause I do think LeBron could get a lot out of Brook Lopez cause he can score still.
I think when the Nets signed Ed Davis, that was kind of scooped that out the window. But I agree. I think there's been some talk about him going back to the Lakers, and he would be a nice fit with LeBron, give him somebody who can roll to the rim and also somebody who can shoot the three ball. So a nice piece for the Lakers. He'll probably be back there. He is from California, so it would make a lot of sense.
And they're still looking for a center. I don't believe they have, like, a true starting center on the roster.
Yeah, unless you think JaVale McGee is that, but I doubt a lot of people do. So,
But, hey, you know, if you split minutes, you know, like 24-24 between Brook Lopez and JaVale McGee, that's not terrible, but it's definitely not ideal.
Yeah, and you figure that there's going to be some time where you play no center. You know, there's going to be some small ball lineups. Luke Walton's known for that. So I wouldn't be surprised if you even see a lot of small ball where even LeBron's at the five or somebody else is at the five that isn't necessarily a center. But any other free agents that haven't signed that you want to mention? Or actually one more guy, Lou Abamute. He looks like he'll likely resign with Houston, but that's another guy that you could probably get on a cheap deal and probably give a nice bench piece if he's healthy.
Yeah, I don't think, the market just so small. I feel like he definitely ends up back in Houston. You know, you were really high on him in Houston. I've been kind of iffy on him, but, you know, they need him.
He had a really good regular season until he dislocated his shoulder two times.
Right. And then, you know, he was scared. What was the rumor? He was scared to even dunk the ball because he was afraid he was going to get hurt because the one time he dunked the ball.
On the last one of the last games of the season, he dunked the ball against, I believe, the Lakers, and that's how he popped out his shoulder the second time. And then there was a couple times in the postseason where he should have dunked the ball and he ended up missing a layup.
Yeah, see, that's worrisome. But I don't know. I feel like he ends up back in Houston. I just think, you know, he sees the opportunity in Houston. I think everyone there truly did enjoy themselves besides Trevor Ariza. I don't know if you saw his comments. You know, he felt desired and wanted because his Suns offered him. You know, they were like tracking him down, which I just feel is so weird because
money talks.
You think Chris Paul and James Harden didn't want you back, man? Come on now.
If the Suns really wanted you so bad, they wouldn't have signed you to a 1-year deal. So let's not act like you didn't get paid $15 million and they signed you to like 3 years, $45 million or something. You know what I mean? I'm not a big fan of like comments like that. Just be honest about it.
I just saw too on the Abamute front. He this morning it was reported that he is hoping the Rockets do re-sign him. So
yeah, it looks probable, and I think he's a Chris Paul type of guy. So, but other than that, nothing really big on the free agent front. You know, we expect something to happen over the next few days, but the restricted guys, I could see them kind of taking almost the whole entire month of July to figure things out. But there were some notes on the Kawhi rumors dropping over the last few days. There was on a podcast, an article, some tweets out there from all different guys from ESPN to local beat writers that when Kawhi was in New York City, the Spurs sent out some staffers, you know, check on Kawhi, see how he's doing. When they arrived at the facility, Kawhi's team hid him from seeing the Spurs staffers, and they were never able to see him when they went to New York City to check on him. Thoughts on this one?
I mean, this is like some narco shit. You know, it's like I'm watching Narcos season 3 when the guy Miguel is hiding in the wall and they're trying to drill the wall just looking for him. Now, that's literally the scene. Actually, someone should make that a Photoshop of that guy Miguel in the wall and Kawhi's face. I it's surprising. I mean, this situation with Kawhi just gets weirder and weirder by the day. You know, reports, and you mentioned it off air that, you know, there were times where he would text him saying, I'm playing tomorrow. And then in the morning, say, nah, I'm not going to play. Like, what the hell is going on? And I read a report that everything changed when he went to China, because he went to China, then no one from the Spurs could get a hold of him. And then, of course, he goes to New York and Spurs would come to see him and they'd hide him. They'd go him out the back door. It's not good. I don't think there's any possible way you can resolve this issue, or there is any way that there can be some kind of fence mended or some kind of trust brought back. It just feels like this situation has, you know, gone downhill so fast. Like the snowball effect is real. And, you know, personally, you know, you mentioned it, you kind of hinted at it off air. I think this has really hurt his perception as a person. I think this is not a good look for Kawhi at all.
Yeah, it's definitely not a great look. Michelle Beadle on ESPN kind of ripped him one earlier this morning. But honestly, it makes sense. She called him an obnoxious diva. And in a way, it definitely feels that. And it feels like even if it's not Kawhi, he's allowing his team to do too much for him, like be your own man and be that guy. And then there's also been reports about him not wanting to go to the Clippers now because LeBron's going to be the big name in town. And then there's other reports saying that he doesn't want to go to the Clippers because he doesn't want to play with LeBron in LA. So there's just so many different things and nobody really knows what's going to happen. And it's like, Kawhi, you should probably just have a press conference or send out a tweet or something letting people know what's up, or people are just going to keep tarnishing your name even if the things aren't true.
Yeah, you know, we know you like to stay quiet and, you know, have no vocal, you know, no facial expressions or anything, but this is kind of the point in time where you need to get ahead of this. Some PR agent should be trying to manage the Kawhi brand that allegedly he's trying to build.
Yeah, he's being too quiet, but I'll see myself out for that. But I think, like, also his value, like you said, it's just hurting his value and making it harder to trade because the Spurs are going to be stubborn. They're not going to move him until they get a deal that they like. And there's also been a lot of chatter about possibly another team popping up as like a dark horse team and kind of swooping in if the Spurs aren't getting an offer they like from the Lakers or the Sixers or something. So the whole Kawhi situation seems like it's getting really messy, and we could see it drag out probably the whole summer and possibly to the trade deadline. I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't suit up for the Spurs, but they don't trade him before the regular season starts.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, right. There's even that rumor report that said Kawhi, if he's not tradable, sit out this season. That would be I don't even know how I would react to that if he decided not to play an entire season. But it feels like too, there's, you know, Kawhi doesn't have much leverage right now either, it feels like, because, you know, the Lakers don't want to give up Ingram or Kuzma. And then, you know, if the Lakers do wait it out, they may, you know, happen to face like a Paul George scenario where they miss out on him entirely. It's just interesting, but I know that we're all on the edge of our seat waiting to see where Kawhi goes, because when he is healthy, when he is on the floor, despite the you know, possible diva comments, he is a top five player in this league when healthy.
Yeah, and then obviously with the health, I guess there is some question, is he going to be 100% if he doesn't play? And I think in terms of basketball, not playing, you know, he pretty much missed the entire season last year, and then if he didn't play this upcoming season, that would be pretty terrible for him and his value in general for the, you know, signing and even just in trade. So that whole situation kind of needs to get handled, and hopefully we see a trade happen within a few weeks.
Yeah,
if you had to make a guess, where do you think is the location he ends up?
I actually believe he somehow ends up in a team on the East. I don't think they send him west, because I find it hard to believe that Pop and the Spurs would be okay with giving him to some team in the West. I feel like it'd be kind of like the Paul George scenario where the Pacers were just like, we're going to send you west and we're not going to have to deal with you besides twice a year. And I feel like that's what the Spurs mentality is going to be, especially with, you know, the continued reports we're getting that just make Kawhi look awful.
Yeah, and I think the Lakers just don't want to send an offer that they think is unfair, especially if they believe they can sign him in the offseason if he's saying he only wants to play in L.A. I think that's another thing, too, is like, where will he play? Where is he open to playing? You know, how bad is his attitude? Like, is it just his team? Can you kind of separate him a little bit? There's just so many different variables. I know there's been a lot of talk about him, it seems like, around the league that he's going to land with the Sixers, which would be probably a great fit in terms of basketball. Now, it depends if he wants to stay there and how much the Sixers are willing to offer. I believe reports are saying they're not willing to include Markelle Fultz, which does make sense if they're not going to be able to re-sign Kawhi in the offseason. That's the whole thing. Like, you don't want to give up too much if you're just getting a one-year rental, and it's so weird. And I feel like this is a situation where a player went from being very well-liked and not really having much of an ego to having a huge ego and trying to take control of the situation where he wants to be in complete power, and any team he goes to, he's not really going to give them a feel or anything. He just wants to make decisions on his own and what's best for him, which isn't necessarily wrong, but I just feel like the whole way he went about it isn't necessarily the right way.
We live in a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately world, and lately all Kawhi's done is make issues, so...
Yeah, and like we said, I don't even know if it's Kawhi or his team or what it is. So,
but from what I've heard, it's his uncle.
Yeah, his uncle's been a big component of what's going wrong and the whole situation. It's like no one really knows what's going on until we hear from Kawhi. Like I said earlier, it would be a great time for him to speak to the public or send out some type of message or a press release.
Nick, you've seen The Revenge of the Sith, right? Star Wars?
Yes.
All right, so I saw a meme today, and it was absolutely hilarious. It was when Obi-Wan Kenobi is talking to Anakin, and it's like, you know, you let this dark lord twist your mind until now you become like what you swore to destroy. But like the words in it were like, you've allowed your uncle to twist your mind until now you've become everything the Spurs hate.
Pretty much. It's pretty much, if Kawhi never played for the Spurs, he wouldn't be a player they would try to attain at this point in time.
Yeah, for sure. It's been a crazy, I mean, what has it been? It's probably only been, you know, 8 months since this all has started happening.
Yeah, and it's just, like I said, the perception of Kawhi has changed so much as well. You know, he was pretty well-liked around the league. You know, you never really thought bad about him. He was just so quiet. You're like, he's a guy that comes in, does his work, scores points, gets better. You know, what's not to like about him? He's a winner. And now this whole ordeal over the last couple months has really changed the perception on him and his value and kind of what to expect. I mean, even if you're a team that trades for him, it's almost like you're nervous about what's going to happen with his whole uncle situation. Is he going to re-sign the offseason? Is he going to throw some type of fit? Like, what's going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, who would have thought that a Zaza Pachulia closeout would become all this?
Pretty much. I mean, I guess that's probably where it started. And I believe they said last year, August 2017, the Spurs were trying to send some guys with Kawhi when he went on a trip to Asia. And there was like some discommunication with that. And they were never sent with him. And Kawhi kind of just went on his own and started doing his own thing then. So it's like this thing has been kind of building up. And it looks like there's a lot of different components that we'll never know about until somebody does like a one-on-one interview with Kawhi. And if we even get that.
Yeah, which is unlikely. Or we might get the interview, but he probably would just stare at them and say, okay or nah, every answer.
Yeah, it feels like light years ago that it was like Kawhi was just sitting there on the bench and being not happy, but, you know, his emotionless face winning for the Spurs, and now we're never going to see that again. Now, to make matters worse for Spurs fans, they lost Tony Parker today. So really not a great time to be a San Antonio fan, but hey, they've been a winning team for the last 20 years, so they can't really complain.
And we will still expect them to be a winning team until proven otherwise.
Exactly. They still have some good players over there as well. There was also some really interesting information that dropped about Kyrie and LeBron today and that whole situation in Cleveland and about Kyrie wanting to be out. There was even mentions about Kyrie and his team not wanting LeBron to come back to Cleveland and Kyrie being the guy. And then after the 2016 championship that he actually wanted to ask for a trade and they waited on it. And just there's like a whole bunch of different dynamics to that. I believe there's a podcast between three Cavs beat writers. You can find that on Twitter, but the whole situation definitely says a little bit more about Cleveland than what we knew.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the one report of Kawhi never wanting LeBron to come back to Cleveland. I mean, I can understand it because I feel like Kyrie has that mentality and that kind of that attitude where he wants to be the guy. And obviously when the greatest player in the league and, you know, possibly ever, especially of this decade, is joining your team, you know you're going to be second fiddle. And then, of course, you know, you told me how there was, you know, stretches of time where he didn't even speak to teammates during some playoff series. That's another guy with some ego issues. And, you know, the Celtics are already looking at him. Some of his comments where he's, you know, basically saying he's going to test free agency. He's looking at the Knicks who, you know, are in shambles to a degree. It's very strange, but when a guy thinks the earth is flat, you know, you never know what to expect.
Yeah, I think there was also some mentions of when he said the earth is flat stuff, he was kind of upset that that would get more attention than when Kyrie would say something that was important in terms of like politics or social matters, that they were caring more about what LeBron was saying. So definitely Kyrie feels like he wants to be that number one guy and be the main guy on a team. So see what happens in the offseason. A lot of these players are definitely kind of pushing to control the power more than they ever have in the past.
Man, that's wild.
Yeah, it's the NBA. It's like there's plenty of drama. It makes the offseason a lot more entertaining, and it even kind of builds up the hype for next year, and it's not even 2019 yet. But that pretty much wraps it up for today. Like I mentioned before, you can check out all the previous shows on iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, and Google Play. Thank you, Corey. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be dropping more pods over the next couple of days.
Till then, knuckleheads.